Goodman, Reel 4.
Yes, so at the interview, she told this Kadato's family that she had a child in Poland, and if they would give her employment, she would work as some sort of housekeeper in mother's help in that family. They had tons of children, eight children, I think, then, that they give her employment. She would go back to Poland, fetch her child. Obviously, it seemed quite normal that you could still go as a Christian across to Poland to pick up a child, otherwise she wouldn't have used that that story. And that she would then work for that family and have her child with her. And apparently this Mr. Kredatos, Mr. and Mrs. Kredatos said, oh, we have so many children, we really badly need help, and you go back to Poland. I'm sure that they must have known that they were going to not pay her very much. Go back to Poland. And she, my mother, then so-called said goodbye to them to go back, so-called, to Poland. Well, in fact, she went to that family where we had Passover, and that was Passover number 1944. And that I remember, and there were Jewish prayers, and I thought that was extraordinary. Obviously, that family must have worn then the yellow star. You see, that probably in Slovakia you had to wear the yellow star. So, I mean, it sounds, if somebody had written that as fiction, I think that, you know, that the person shows, it can't possibly have happened, and the person showing too much imagination is too extraordinary a story. So we had Passover, and then we then went to that family. Now, in between, I remember vaguely, somebody took it onto himself to try me to take me away while my mother was with this Kadatos, found some family I could stay by myself. One of those overzealous persons of the Jewish community tried to take me away without sort of obviously asking my mother's permission, and I hid. I mean, I do remember hiding, but you know, maybe my life, I didn't feel I was so threatened because there was no question of tummy. I certainly don't remember. I just went into hiding, found myself in some disused place, which my mother actually describes in these few pages I've got of her story. So we arrived in that family where we must have been then for just after Easter 44 to the liberation. There it caused me some problem because, I mean, obviously I was Jewish. There were all these children in that family. I think I was the same age as number three. The eldest girl was a very nice girl, very kind girl. And then there was a boy. Obviously, being a boy, I had much less to do with him. I had much more to do with the number three, who reminded me a little bit of that girl of the family in Kraków. Was a bit of a bitchy little girl, and the fact that I had that big secret, and there it caused me more problems, maybe because I was living on a permanent basis with my mother, who we slept, by the way, in the same bed, where I had this big secret that I was a Jew, and we went to church, which, by the way, I liked. I thought church was wonderful. Incense and First Communion, and it was a good life. This Mr. Kredatos, yes, spoke German. The family knew three languages. The family knew German, Hungarian, and Slovak. He was one of those Preuß-Deutschen, that means when the Germans then marched in, because shortly after that, there was a German occupation where the German army came in. They were received with open arms by that family, who actually then registered themselves as German, because I don't know how many years before, their family or part of the family came from Germany, settled in Slovakia, and they were actually German, one of the languages. So they could have stayed either Slovak or chosen the German nationality. I think my mother was maybe very slightly younger than this Mrs. Kredatos. Now, Mr. Kredatos had a farm, but obviously didn't yield enough to feed his family, because every 2 days he was sort of a part-time policeman. So one day he was a policeman, one day he was a farmer. Quite extraordinary. But obviously they were nice. I mean, the mother and father were nice, and we had... I think all of us lived in two rooms. some of the children, I think, went to live with grandparents, were sort of on the other end of the courtyard. At Cognac, I remember when we went to visit the sort of suites, the grandparents were there, and they were actually quite nice. And one of the things also I was able to lick the bottom of the glass was at Cognac, which to this day in Advocat, which I also love. But so the question that I was different from the others, and my mother made me say my Hebrew prayer. So, oh yes, she said my little Hebrew prayer every day, and sleeping in the same bed as my mother. So that was a little bit difficult, you know. You are in church, but what we're praying this is not our God, that's somebody else's God. That gave me some problems later on as well. And then that my equivalent in that family, I did say, well, a big secret to tell you, and that I'm Jewish, but somehow the girl never picked it up. But I do remember feeling terrible about telling her the telling I had. And sort of couldn't keep it anymore, and I was going to tell her something quite secret, quite extraordinary. It had no repercussions. Did she maybe not even know what Jew was, or didn't report it back, who was interested, but I can't tell. But I remember telling her. The other thing I remember very well is her telling me that I'm not entitled that I'm eating their bread. So having been sort of quite an extroverted little girl, very, very secure, very sure, there was a metamorphosis, I think, which took place over time, and that bread really stuck in my throat, and I was so stupid and introverted, and sort of saying to her, you know, my mother's working hard enough for that bread. And really, she made me feel by actually being so aggressive about it, I really wasn't entitled. I mean, that is something I remember very well.
I was also wondering, you know, you're getting on a bit, aren't you? You're coming up to 7 and 8.
No, I left at 8. Yes. No, I must have left at 8. Mm. So then really we're talking about more between 8 and 9.
Yes. So how about your education? You know, were you getting any reading lessons or anything?
Absolutely nothing. So now the children must have been going to school and I didn't. Again, in Czechoslovakia you start school at 7. So as far as I went, what did I do while they were going to school? They must have been younger children. Why didn't I go to school? Because I could have been registered to go to school, but I didn't. I left them. Yes, about, actually I found it quite interesting to look back that I never, in fact, was bored. I mean, what on earth did I do? I mean, including in that hole on the front here. I must have been hours in that hole. I mean, there was just nothing. I mean, what did one do? I suppose maybe one just sort of felt shelter. One did feel endangered, and being in a hole gave you some shelter. In the other family, where I taught myself to read, I mean, I must have been bored enough to sort of plow through Polish being phonetic. And I knew that, I mean, this alphabet till L, why L stuck in my mind? That was in Jaroszice, and that young aunt, my mother's younger sister, I remember once was so thrilled to see my exercise book, which and she sort of snapped it away to go and show to her parents, you know, how wonderful that I was able, maybe she couldn't write, but I was able to write. So I know that my mother gave me some lessons. And at that time, my mother must have also been sort of happy enough to be amongst us. After all, that is the first bit of normality we had, even so she was living a lie, namely that she was Jewish. The other thing she had to talk about language is that she understood German. She had to pretend she did not understand. So for them to speak so my mother wouldn't understand, they would speak German. But I learned German. I speak German to this day, and this is why I learned it. The children already didn't know Hungarian, because that was a part of Europe which at one time also was occupied by the Anglo, what are they called? The Empire.
The
Austro-Hungarian Empire. And yeah, whatever, they were able to speak Hungarian. The children already didn't speak Hungarian. But German, obviously, being there, I did learn, and my mother could also pretend that she was picking up some words and so as she went along the way. But she had a bit of a problem. But they were rather anti-Jewish without knowing any Jews, because again, they were sort of Catholic in the primitive sort of way. They believed that a Christian child would be killed, you know, every year, so the blood of that child would be, you know, going to the matzot, to the traditional Jewish bread. I mean, it's amazing how what they could believe in.
Were you picking up anything about what was happening to the Jews at this time in 1944?
Well, not. I mean, I was not. I mean, this is something I was not aware of. But it, you know, if you can imagine yourself as a child being just marked being different. Obviously, we were much more middle class. We were living amongst peasants, and I'm sure that our whole, you know, my mother was sort of a lady in comparison to the people she lived among. So we were already different. And then I think some of it really I was aware. And I mean, I left the country. The world I knew obviously had come completely to an end. Now, that my father wasn't with us anymore. You know, as much as I remember concretely missing him horribly at the time of the frontier, but seeing the children interact with the father, looking back on it, I don't remember feeling that they had a father and I didn't. Maybe because, you know, there were such abnormal times and there was no, and I was there with my mother and we had a certain position and maybe somehow I didn't identify sufficiently with the children that they had a father and I didn't anymore.
Did you your relationship alter with your mother? You know, you were saying a little earlier that she was a more sort of aloof, a very caring mother, but more aloof, you know, in an emotional way. Did you find that you did get closer?
No. I mean, I really don't. I mean, this is really a little bit with hindsight, remembering me in Auschwitz. I remember her looking at me very, very sternly, as if I'd committed some sort of crime. I mean, isn't it extraordinary? I must have been quite a young child, and I remember I had this fear of sort of saying to myself, my God, you know, then she's really cross with me. What on earth could I have done? I must have done something pretty well. And she did it as a joke. And I mean, you know, the idea of actually doing something as a joke. And I must have felt it enough that I actually remember this sort of thing. But no, I mean, there she seemed, you know, we were sharing the same bed, and she had a thing about saying, you know, that you know, we obviously were Jews, and we were saying the prayer, and I don't know to what extent she had a fear that I was going to go and blurb out the fact that we were Jews and we were different. I mean, after all, we already hunted for a time. Now, we lived in one more family in Poland, but I just wanted, there were two, in fact, and I don't remember the chronological order. I know we did live with another family for a short time, but why we left one and we couldn't live anymore with them, and how my mother actually got hold of them, I think it went from word of mouth. I think she was in contact with Jews who were on this Aryan papers, and somehow by word of mouth it must have gone that, you know, this wasn't safe anymore, and then we went. So for a short time we lived, and I remember there was a man, there was a Jewish man who was living there as well, and he had some sort of something wrong with his skin, and his sort of skin was peeling, and he was not a particularly nice man, and was not that very friendly. There was a child, there was a younger child in that family, so the mother, father, the Christian couple, there was that man who was harboring like us. The other thing I remember, they sent me out to buy, which really turned out to be condoms. Now, I can't tell you how did I remember at the time, there was something, I went to a pharmacy. So you see, I was able to go out, and I was able to go to a shop, and I was made to buy, because what my mother did, you internally hid money. So she would actually sort of put money into a condom, which you could obviously buy openly during the war, in a pharmacy. See, I mean, I've never thought about that. You know, sort of things come out in a condom, which she was, and also she swallowed a diamond. And I remember the stories of Dami to sort of watch her stool to find out. I mean, extraordinary to find out how, when that diamond would reappear. And obviously the money somehow, did she hide it? Was she going to hide it? But I was sent as a small child on behalf of the, and how this man came into these condoms, I don't remember, that he was involved, or was it written on a bit of paper. But we knew after the war that that man was actually killed by that family. And that this family, this husband and wife, when actually after the war, there was a court case, because they in fact killed. I mean, I must have heard that quite a while later. So, you know, they were nice. I mean, I remember there were the lovely times in the farm. On a Sunday, one would know everybody was scrubbed and we had a bath. It was such a firm, what was the bath called? Steel, like a steel bath set up in the kitchen, and water was being boiled and heated, and all the children in turn were bathed in the same water, obviously. And the mother and father, Mr. and Mrs. Cardatus, and my mother had the last bit of the water they were able to bath, and it was replenished, obviously, with hot water. So, you know, they were, and my mother must have been sort of nicely treated by them as well, that there was no question of her not being treated in a polite manner. And then we would go on the droshka, they would have no cars, so you had horse-drawn carriage, and there was a sort of a passenger's horse-drawn carriage, which was then on a Sunday we would visit other relatives in the country, where we would be given sweets, I remember, and paper, like a paper tube was made up of newspaper, and we were given sweets by this brother, her brother or his brother, visiting this uncle of an aunt of the children.
Would you have had toys?
No recollection of toys whatsoever. Absolutely none. But I mean, I do remember playing outside. I remember they had a hayloft. So I mean, I have no recollection of having actually made toys. I do remember dolls in Jaroszice. I remember that I had dolls, and my father would come from one of his business trips and would bring me a doll. I mean, that I don't really remember. I don't remember any toys. But again, time just didn't hang heavily on our hands at all. And as I said, I remember the church services and remembering that all these prayers were done to a God which wasn't mine. I must have remembered probably vaguely the Jewish, you know, the prayers in the Auschwitz, the Jewish one, that I really belonged to sort of a different species.
Yes, it was interesting when you were saying about the Passover, when you went to that Passover meal, you know, when you were in Slovakia. Was that meaningful for you?
Yeah, because again, it felt like peacetime. Obviously, it was false peacetime because we did leave, but we were never hunted. I mean, there never were emotional blackmail anymore. So I would say that, you know, there were relatively peaceful times. Yes, but that Passover was fantastic. Water, they put something into their water. It's the most bicarbonate of soda they must have put in. So one makes one own soda water with bicarbonate of soda. Or something similar, and that also sort of impressed me that I was able to have that. But it all was, the other thing I remember is my mother sort of saying, oh, you wait, one day it will be like it was before the war. So I remember, you see, again, verbalizing about it now. There was a demarcation in my mind, a bit of paradise before the war, and this paradise would come again after the war. That was again the next chapter, saying how this was actually completely shattered, that I was looking for a time which I remembered vaguely as being before the war, which never came after the war. So probably the nearest to before the war was that Passover, and even staying with that family, even praying to the God which wasn't mine.
Liberation of Slovakia, that would have occurred earlier, wouldn't it, than the end of the war? This would have happened, what, 1944, was it?
No, still 45. It still happened in 45, because that must have been... I do remember the Germans actually marching out of the town, so I remember the German marching in with the music into Krakow. I remember them... marching out, and the family were actually friendly with some German soldiers who then came on a regular basis to the farm, and I think even helped with some of the work. And then also it was getting towards the end of the war where they were losing, so I think that they were ordinary soldiers, just ordinary people, not part of Gestapo, SS or whatever, and they were amongst people who were very, very friendly towards them, and also they started to speak about, Hitler losing the war. So, you know, the whole atmosphere obviously changed. I even have a photograph. I have a photograph of my mother and myself and the children, Mr. and Mrs. Cardatus, and the German soldiers. Yes. And But then, not only they were, I remember them leaving the town, sort of marching out, but also followed by quite a number of the local population, who then, you know, who followed them. Yes, I mean, there were the Russians were about to enter, and they were fleeing. And then we went actually. The sort of the
it was winter.
Yeah, because there was snow. It was winter. There was snow, so that must have been the winter of 45. Yes, beginning 45, because there were. I don't know if the town was bombarded, but anyhow, one heard sort of cannon noises, and we sort of were sheltering in the cellar, and the Mr. Kodatos, being on sort of duty, went out to sort of do his work in the streets, and it was all terribly exciting. And what was quite incredible is when the troops did march in, and there were, I don't know if you know that the Russians sent really the very young, the most inexperienced young, as really like cannon fodder. They sent that was the first wave, and they in fact looted shops. So there was the as far, for me it was the enemy. It was the enemy as the German soldier, but it was a German gentleman leaving, and the savage was coming in, looting the shops, and Mr. Gradatus was coming with goods, because, I mean, he helped himself. The shop was looted, he was on duty, and he would maybe help himself to some goods as he went along. And yeah, it was a terribly exciting time. And then he made a big mistake by telling some soldiers who came and who were billeted in the farm, given accommodation in the farm, that he had some vodka. And then he was, you know, really harassed for more and more vodka. And I thought these Russian soldiers were wonderful. I thought they were so handsome. So, you know, that's the influence of a child, knowing that there were the goodies and the other ones were the baddies. Even so, the family we were living amongst didn't feel that, it didn't share that at all. So we stayed with them still for a while, and my mother, as far as I remember, did not tell them that we were Jews. So we stayed on till my mother felt that somehow we were secure enough, and that that there was not going to be a counteroffensive, and that the Germans might come back for a while. And from what I remember, or I was told, that is, we knew all along, you know, that they were Jews, which we know that they didn't, because the family made some sort of, you know, stupid anti-Semitic remark, completely ignorant remarks, without, obviously, they had no idea at all. But we stayed in very good terms with them. My mother set up, and by some incredible irony, she was actually allocated the house of this family who gave us that Passover, who didn't come back. Actually, some relatives of theirs did come back. There were two girls, and that was my first encounter as a child, actually, of being told something about concentration camp. And they were living on the first floor, and we had the downstairs. And my mother then had a pig, and she had a cow, and she was very entrepreneurial, my mother, because she was baking cakes. She made some sort of cream cakes, milfoil type of cakes, which she then sold to shops, to sort of grocers. And so yeah, it seems to me that in no time at all she sort of set up on her own to earn some money. She did have something left still over from the money she did not spend on sheltering us during the war. Maybe she made some savings as well, working that for family, whatever little they gave her. Maybe, you know, she had no reason, she had nothing to spend it on. So she set up house, and then she, in fact, then went to Poland. I can't even tell you who looked after me, because it obviously, again, was completely non-traumatic. She went back to Poland to find out if any relatives had come back. And the idea was that they would give themselves a rendezvous in the Jewish community in Krakow. Whoever, you know, survived would go and meet up. And she met an uncle of mine, that is that surviving sister I was telling you about who survived concentration camps, sister of my father's, her husband, is the only person who in fact turned up at this rendezvous in Krakow. And I think she went something like twice back. And once she said that it really could have cost her life because somebody wanted to give her a lift across the frontier with a horse-drawn carriage, and she somehow didn't want to wait. She had to wait, I don't know for what reason. He said, if you wait for me for a couple of hours or something like that, you come with me and I'll give you a lift. And he and his passengers were all killed, some sort of pogrom across on the frontier.
Did that happen, you know, towards the end of the war and after the war in Poland?
Well, I understand that several thousand. There was, I think, in Katowice, there was a pogrom where there was a Jewish house sheltering Jews who used it as a hostel, where the inmates of the whole house were killed. So there are several thousand. I've always wanted to make my business to know the statistics more at my fingertips. And I think they came back to ask for their goods, or they would come back to a small town where most of the Jews were wiped out. So a handful would come back. And I think maybe the Christians were worried that they would have to give some of the goods back, the appropriated. It was, I mean, quite unforgivable. But I don't know any more details of that besides that horse-drawn carriage on the frontier was that he was killed. Maybe it was just thieves. Who else? If there were only Jewish passengers on that car, I can't remember. I don't know the number. And there, my mother became depressed. There was an enormous changeover of, you know, the mother who was there and who was, you know, nice enough, pleasant enough, very affectionate, not so affectionate. It really just was not of great importance, who was there, and we would say, you know, they're just the two of us, we have to, so there was very much a sort of solidarity of being together. So she set up house, helped by this Kadatis family, who really were sort of, you know, our big friends in town, which speaks well for them and for my mother, that they, you know, there was enough friendship going between them, even so she didn't tell them the truth, who she really was, that, you know, they understood it, didn't hold it against her. And they helped her with some of the beads she had, and she even said, "Oh, her grandfather would turn, her own father would turn in the grave if he knew that she was had a pig, because Jews were not supposed to breed pigs." And but her becoming so depressed, I mean, she would light the five evening candles, and she would just cry. And there she could not, and maybe, you know, as mothers today, if something, God forbid, happened to us, I can imagine that we would sort of know enough from reading books that, you know, your child is 9 years old and your child is only a child, and whatever unhappiness you've got, the child can only share up to a point. She's got the child, and you feel like crying, maybe you do that more privately and you put on a happy face, which she was unwilling, unable, whatever, she just couldn't. And she became actually not nice to me. She was more like a stepmother. And, you know, I had to do chores. I remember hating, absolutely hating to sweep or whatever. And she really became more like, when you imagine a stepmother from, you know, stepmother books. And she was really very, very unhappy. And the point is that she was not neurotically depressed. She had all the reasons in the world to be depressed. But I had nothing like as happy a time than I had leading this false life.
Was this anything to do with your father? You know, you were saying she went back to Krakow, you know, to the rendezvous place. And obviously, you know, you must both have been wondering about your father.
She was sure he was going to come back. Somehow, you know, she was and you lived in the hope. And then obviously every time she went back, let's say she came back twice, and as time retreated, she became obviously less confident that he would come back, and you know, she was happily married, and I mean, her whole life was completely shattered. So you can imagine upholding, keeping going, and then suddenly there was end of the war, the devastation of her own family was much worse than she could fear, and normality came back, but not her. It really was, but I remember very well as a child being very unhappy. She then sent me to, and that was the first time where we were separated after the war. And she sent me to holiday camp in the Tatran Mountains. Then she was very good. She proved to be very good about funding organizations who would pay for this and the other, and that was, you know, as a refugee, she was entitled to send her child to a holiday camp in the Tatran Mountains, which was obviously very badly run. I think physically it was very nice. That was my first sort of the beginning of my terrible complexes. I felt utterly and completely inadequate. So from the child I was, you know, as I told you, being the wunderkind with a good memory, being extroverted, I became completely, and obviously under the influence of having a mother who was who got so depressed. The people who were running it, I mean, I remember one instance, they would have a play, and they would give out the roles to different children, and they would call out my name. And I was so shy, instead of getting up and sort of answering to my name, I didn't get up at all. And then one of them said to me, "Oh, don't bother to go. It took you so long to get up. You might as well sit down again."